I'm extremely passionate, and if I don't always keep pushing myself with projects and ideas, I get bored, right? So like I'm not the type of person that you're gonna see sitting on a bench like doing nothing. I can do that for about 30 seconds and then I literally will go crazy. So in my mind, I've always have like multiple layers of like projects going on. And this, I think this is why I've been so efficient at with the ITG, the conference planning, is because like I have this ability to really like multi-layer very thing at once, which sometimes can be exhausting for people around me. They say like, well, when is JC ever going to stop, right?
This episode contains adult language and adult humor.
Since when have trumpet players ever been considered adults?
If you are easily offended by these types of conversations, consider switching to the oboe. Welcome to the Trumpet Gurus Hang podcast. I'm your host, Jose Johnson. My guest for this episode is J.C. Dubjerleski. J.C., well, he's a man of action. As a soloist and a founding member of the Grammy-nominated Tromba Monday Trumpet Ensemble, JC regularly showcases his amazing skills as a classical trumpet player. JC flexes his teaching chops as the trumpet professor at the Westchester University School of Music, and as a conference director for the International Trumpet Guild, JC uses his organizational skills as a force for good for the trumpet world. So, pour yourself a big glass, pull up a chair, and let the hang begin! And welcome to another exciting episode of the Trumpet Gurus Hang. I am joined by J.C. Dubjerleski. J.C., I'm going to just keep calling you J.C. because I'm having a hard time with your name anyway, as it is. So it is a pleasure to catch up with you. We've known each other for a number of years, but it's nice to kind of have this kind of a casual conversation.
Well, thank you for having me on your podcast, and the pleasure is all mine, Jose.
Oh man, it's always fun. I think I first met you back in the early days of the Westchester Trumpet Symposium or Conference. I forget what it was called, festival.
Yeah, that's correct. I think it was the first year we did the Trumpet Fest, which would have been, I think, 2007 here. Yeah, a long time ago. Yeah.
Yeah, man, that's. It was really cool for me because, I don't live that far from Westchester, so it was like an hour-ish drive for me to get out there and being able to bring in some of the talent that you brought in, and you're responsible actually for me meeting Joey Tartel, which I think that was the end of life as we know it when I met Joey.
That I can imagine, yes.
But there's some really great stuff going on there, and I had no idea that Westchester had such an amazing music program going on. So I mean, how long have you been at Westchester?
So I came here that was fall of 2006. That was my first year. That was right after Ken Loudermilk retired, after a long, long time of being here, and I was here. So my first year, it was a full time temporary position when I came in. And then they did a national search after that again. And then I started officially in 2007 as like the position it's been. And it's a wonderful place to be. It's a great program. And the fact that we're located in like this tri-state area and being so close to like Philadelphia, New York, and DC, it really gives not only a strong recruiting pool, but also the ability for our students to be exposed to some like incredible players outside the institution. So I love it, and having looked back, tried to like, even looking at our jobs, this place has just been like the place to be, and like I love being here.
I was really surprised when I got out there. I mean, first of all, I never even heard of Westchester University, but I did know where the brewery was, where Iron Hill was, so I definitely was hip to that. But that's what I love about living in this area, is the proximity to everything, and without having the all of the problems that come with living in a major metropolitan area, it's just kind of got a nice vibe to it. So like with your recruiting process, I mean, do you see a large influx from out of state or from outside of the geographical area that you're in?
Well, I think we have a pretty balanced recruiting like class almost every year. I mean, like PA, New Jersey, and Maryland, Delaware. I mean, like those are kind of like the main states. We do get some students from New York and Maryland as well. But I think like the primary like number of students would be Pennsylvania and New Jersey, I would say. Those kind of where like most of them. And like, we usually have an incoming class of 10 to 14 students every year. So it's a good, healthy program. And right now we have what, 33 trumpet majors. So it's a big program. So yeah.
Yeah. That's nice. That's very nice. This kind of position, you know, this higher ed position, is this something that you had always aspired to, or does you kind of just kind of naturally evolve into it?
Well, I mean, when I started, when I was younger, I was kind of like everybody. I wanted to be a soloist, right? I wanted to play everywhere through the world. And as you grow through like through the career and you start experiencing performing in all the settings that have done, it's like you kind of realize that sharing the experience and the knowledge become part of what you want to do as well. So teaching, yeah. So when I came to the US and I started doing like my grad school, and once I got to my doctorate, the experiencing what college in the US was and seeing all the great things going on, and like having studied with Dave Fickman and seeing what really like cool, like passionate education was, really pushed me to want to try to experience that as well and get a position. And it gives the freedom to be able to do everything we want. I mean, we teach, yes, primarily, but like the flexibility of the positions allow us to travel, perform, record, I mean, do pretty much anything we want. So it's really a very healthy career, like path for a lot of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when you're thinking about the educational side of things, some people are inspired more by the great teachers they've had. Some people are inspired to be teachers by the horrible teachers that they've had, trying to make not have anybody else have to go through the crap they had to go through. So, you were just saying, your positive experience in grad school definitely shaped you and put you down that path. But are there any other influences or any, people or experiences that you could point to and say, yeah, this really kind of helped me to create my perspective of what it means to be a trumpet educator?
Well, I go by the mindset that there's no bad experience in life, right? Every experience is a lesson. And every educator that's trying to share some knowledge brings something of value to almost every student. Now, are we ready to hear the information that's shared? That's a different thing. There are certain things maybe that sometimes some people try to get into and they don't have enough information to share that knowledge, and maybe they should hold back a little bit. But I think from a student standpoint, being exposed to as much as we can from different teachers' experiences, part of the world, is a key factor to what we learn. And for me, it's like I was lucky since I was a kid. Like my dad was a conductor, so I was always exposed to like incredible musicians. I mean, I have Maurice Andre and people like that play with his orchestra. So like those are the people who like put trumpets in my hand. So I've experienced those great like teachers all the way across from like when I was growing up, and I think a lot of the issues that have happened in my early years in my career were probably more because I wasn't ready for some of the information that was shared with me, or I approached it or understood it in a manner that wasn't helpful to me. So I think like I looked at everything that was ever shared, all the books that were used, all the like the fundamentals that we approached, and like I'm still going back to some of those exercises from the beginning and apply that on my own teaching, but I'm thinking about it differently than when it was back then. Now, there are some like things that being shared once in a while that just like kind of make you raise your eyebrows, but I think that's part of like what we do. I look at my first year at Westchester, some of the information I was sharing that first year, like the inexperienced teacher, right? And I look back and I was like, well, maybe that wasn't the smartest way to say certain things. And we better ourselves with the years and the experience, and we find better ways to share our knowledge.
Yeah. Well, and you're absolutely right in that you know, as you go through the process of improving your skills as a teacher, you can look back and go, well, you know, hindsight, yeah, that maybe wasn't the best way, or, you know, that wasn't the most effective way, and now I have a deeper understanding. And I think sometimes it's difficult because there's kind of this, especially for like the student, because there's always in the student like, okay, they're the teacher, so they should know everything. And even some teachers feel like they should know everything, but we're all learning. We're all through different, going through different stages in our personal development, our levels of understanding. So, it's just that being able to take the information and the good stuff. Well, it's all good stuff, but the stuff that you know works, you keep working it. But then you also have to look at how can you tweak that information to make it a little bit more accessible to the people that you're working with. So, like when you're looking at your career now, as you know, the tenure that you have in that position, the amount of time you spent in that position, I mean, what do you think has like been the most I don't know, how do I want to put this? What do you think has changed the most about your approach to teaching as you've gotten more years under your belt and have more students that you've worked with?
I think being more open to understand where a student is coming from, try to relate more to the life experiences the students have. I started teaching, I came here gung-ho, I was like, well, I came from the conservatory, like strong performing experience, right? Everybody's great, everybody's strong, everybody's coming with all this information, this ability. And I started right at when I came out of Westchester with the same kind of power, energy, without thinking if the student's background made them ready for that. And I think at times I may have come a little too strong and over the years you learn to understand people, work with people's lives experiences, where they're coming from, what they've gone through. Compassion, like, becomes a big part of what we do. And I think one of the things that helped me over the last 5 years, mainly when I look back, is I did for a few years, I was the assistant dean for student affairs here at Westchester. And I did, that was for 4 years I did that position, and I stopped this past year. And through that position, I got to interact with students, not just trumpet students, but like every student in the School of Music. And it really gave me a different perspective of what students' life were and how different they were from my background and my experiences. So my expectations were very different. And I think I've also allowed myself to be more open and try to mold the teaching more on where the student is and not where the student should be, right? It's like we all expect, oh, you're coming to college, you need to know all this. And the reality nowadays is a lot of those students don't have that experience anymore, because either like, where they're coming from is a very small band program, or the educators they've had haven't had all the ability yet to be able to really create this program where it's sharing all the information they should, or some of them have never had lessons prior to coming to like to our institution. So we're really having a total different layer of abilities that we have to address. So we can't just have one program fits all. We really have to adapt to every single person and learn how to work with people's like personalities.
Yeah. Well, that is a sign of maturity and growth. So I congratulate you on that, because, you know, there are a lot of people that are just kind of stuck in the pedagogical trough that they've been in for their entire career, and not thinking about the fact that as teachers, regardless of what you're teaching, teachers actually are servants. You know, we're there for the students and to provide them the best opportunity for their growth. And there does have to be a level of understanding and meeting people where they are. So I'm with you 100% on that. 100%. So as a performer, excuse me, you've got so much going on. You have your solo stuff that you do. You have the ensemble work that you do and record with Tromba. So, I mean, how do you feel, like, where do you feel you are in your your progression as JC, the trumpet performer?
Ooh, I think I see that as like a never-ending path of progress. I looked at everything I've done. I've been lucky in my life to be able to really have a lot of various experiences in like all across performing. And I'm extremely passionate. And if I don't always keep pushing myself with projects and ideas, I get bored, right? So like, I'm not the type of person that you're gonna see sitting on a bench, like doing nothing. I can do that for about 30 seconds and then I literally will go crazy. So in my mind, I've always have like multiple layers of projects going on. And this is why I've been so efficient that with the ITG, the conference planning, is because like I have this ability to really like multi-layer everything at once, which sometimes can be exhausting for people around me. They say like, well, when is JC ever going to stop, right? So, but it's, in my life, I've wanted to solo with orchestra, which I've done, and which I will always enjoy to do. That's something that I will never want to stop. The solo recitals, both around the world, like piano in different settings, that's always fun to do. Chamber music, to me right now, is probably one of the most rewarding, I think, chamber music ensemble I've had since we started Tromba Mundi in 2008, not just because of the performing, but because of the friendship we created. And to me, I think those are some of my best friends now. Like when we think about when we started 2008, we barely knew each other. And I mean, I will always remember Joey showing up in shorts with his pink shoes. And right, so that was my first experience and looked at it. And it's like, I think there's so many takeaway from those experiences, learning like things I've got out of playing with that trumpet like ensemble. To me, I think that has helped me shape my like path as well. What I'm looking in the future, I'm open always to new ideas. You see, it's like I don't have anything specific that I think I want to achieve right now playing. I'm allowing my past to like drive me to where it is, right? It's like last summer, for example, I was in Canary Islands for a music festival, and I met one of like the principal from the Royal Opera in Madrid, and we were talking. Then he invited me to go play with the Madrid Opera there for a month, which I did back in the fall. Which like things like this, I never thought in my life I would be able to play on a pit like in orchestra for the opera for a whole series like this. I never thought that would even cross my path. But the experience I've had led me to make that happen and being open to it, and it's an experience I will never forget. Right. So like I'm kind of letting life take me on the path, and like when things happen and come in front of me, I just jump in arms open and see where that's gonna take me. I mean, yeah. I think I would like to see more performing in the Latin music. I love salsa. So I think I could see myself start really digging a little bit more. Have a project coming on for next fall, because I'm gonna take a sabbatical here at the university for the semester. And I'm going to Spain to do some research on flamenco music, to make arrangements for trumpet in various like ensembles, and try to bring that music on a more performing setting for us to be able to do for recital like purposes. So kind of again, Latin flavor. That's kind of where I am right now in my life. Is like I really like these exciting, fresh like rhythms and things that I want to be able to incorporate in my playing.
Yeah, well, that's cool. That's very cool. I mean, the study of the flamenco, that I'd be really interested in learning more about that. You know, so even those the Latin music is my roots, part of my roots. I really don't know that much about it, and I the more I play it and get exposed to it, the more fascinated I am by the rhythmic concepts and things like that. And I mean, there's nothing to get you moving like good Latin music. So
I would agree.
Absolutely. I'll be looking forward to that. So when you, when you're looking at with Tromba or some of the other things that where you have creative input, what is it that you're trying to bring to the table, you know, in terms of your musicality, your taste, your passions?
Hmm. Oh, that's a good question. I think it was like in the chamber music, all the projects I've done have been, they've all started based on building relationships and friendships. right? It's like, I think we're like, everybody that's in all the groups we've played have been at an extremely high level of performing ability. And they've all, everybody has their own kind of niche in things that we, like, they do. And I think that's the exciting thing with Stromba Mundi, is like, we all have our specialty kind of as a player. But once we come in, we have the ability to melt our sounds into one, no matter how different our backgrounds are, right? From like lead to jazz to like orchestra to like, I mean, international. I mean, you really bringing a set of six different people. And once we're on stage, it doesn't feel like that. So I think like the openness and the welcoming factor of allowing everybody's natural abilities and natural like experiences to come in into the playing without judging or putting anybody down. I mean, we are incredibly sarcastic. Yes, I think if anybody sat in our rehearsals, a lot of people outside the group probably could not handle the amount of things going on. I would say, I'll put it that way, right? Or things being said to each other. But we've got to this point where we understand each other, we know each other, we know what is being said, and everything is being said with a total professional respect on each other's ability. And I think that's has been something very rewarding. But we all know our strength and we all know our weaknesses. So when we make our arrangements for our ensembles, it's written specifically with that in mind. So same thing with any other chamber music programs or ensembles I've done, is like the selection of the repertoire we've done have been specifically to showcase the people involved in those in things. Like there's a recording that should be coming out hopefully in the spring that I've done a year ago on the trio music for trumpet and strings, like by Uwezen, right? So like we did the trumpet, violin, piano, trumpet, cello and piano, and then I did the Morales passion dance with violin too. So like trying to find those like instrumentation that bring different colors, right? Being able to like dig deep and try to find, how can I make my sound work with those instruments that we don't usually play as in a solo like environment, and try to experience things, just push the limits into what we want to do and can do.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, that's such a great thing to be able to do, is to be surrounded by such high caliber performers and to be able to work with each other in a way that is very comfortable, but also is challenging, you know, for yourself, you know, because when you get to a point, you definitely need somebody to kick your butt. You know, it's so easy to kind of get the top dog head, you know, mindset. You know, it's like, well, you know, I'm the prof, or I'm this, or I'm that. And it's when you get in those situations where you're on this kind of more level playing field, then that's where your growth comes in. And I can definitely tell that you're one of those people that, like you said, you don't like to sit still. And part of that is that you like to grow and continue to learn and develop as a player and as a person. So yeah, that's so crucial. But like, when you're talking about like administrative things, you know, you're actually, you know, as a professor and then as an assistant dean, you had a lot of the administrative stuff, and you kind of touched on your work with ITG. So let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, your position, your official position is what there?
Who's ITG?
Yes.
Who's ITG is conference director.
Okay. Yes.
I started the first conference for ITG I held was in 2014 here in Valley Forge. And that was under the old format when ITG provided the branding and the local host would run the event. Then 2015, they had hired some person that came in, like planned the conference in Ohio. Then I came in 2016 for the California conference back in the full-time position that now ran by ITG itself, and the position being in-house instead of being external. And I've been doing it since then. So like, basically it's anything that has to do with like planning the conference, from like finding the sites, dealing with logistics, like on-site, off-sites, like volunteer, finding the volunteers, like getting putting everything together in one piece and bring it to life. Let's put it that way. So like, it's basically, I'm the behind the scenes, and it was a huge group of people working with me that are some of my close friends, some people I can trust that I know is going to work well. It's a huge amount of work because we usually work on like one or two, sometimes 2.5 conferences at the same time, depending on the planning that we have. And during the year, it's heavy. I mean, it's a lot of heavy things. And one, by the time the conference starts, it kind of just rolls. So like, it's just kind of, if you watch it happen, you just kind of like deal with a couple of like small fires that you have to like deal with at that point. But by the time we get to the event, between the board of directors that's there, all the volunteers that we have, the staff, everything is in place. It's fine. But I'm the behind the scene person. Like once we're there, you're never going to see me in the front of the house or thing like this, because it's not my place. I want to make sure everybody gets their time, and it makes me happy. It makes me excited. It really like fulfills my life to be able to see people's smiles when they go there, and they can share experiences with some of their heroes, right? So that you come there and you see some of the people you never thought you could even experience to like in real, and be able to talk to you or have a drink with, or like just being able to share that with the trumpet world, to me has been one of the most exciting things. And it's probably why I'm still doing it right now, because like, I mean, the energy it takes, it's huge. But if there wasn't the personal fulfillment as working towards it, I don't think I would be able to keep going with it. But it's been fun. And I think there's a lot of growth. There's a lot of change happening. Some great improvements are made for the organization. And I can see a really exciting next few years here as we came back from the pandemic. So, I mean, it's just fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have to tell you that Valley Forge ITG, that is actually kind of where the seed got planted for this podcast. That's where it all started to really formulate in my head. And it just took me a few years to finally, you know, get my crap together enough to be able to do this. But yeah, it is the hang. It is the being able to, whether it's at the bar or at the restaurant or at the booths or just in the lobby, you know, between sessions, being able to be there with your heroes, the people that you've admired, the people that you've respected, and just to be able to, in some cases, your old friends, just to catch up and to, you know, spend a few days just completely geeking out about trumpet. And that's something that's really, really special. And I certainly have missed being able to do that the past few years in person. So, you know, speaking of which, the obviously COVID kind of threw a wrench in so many different things, and you guys did do the virtual conference, and are now back to doing the in-person things. And what are some of the things that you, from your perspective, have seen as kind of crucial in the steps you're going to go moving forward? What are some of the things that you're going to try and bring, that you want to bring to the mix? And then also, what are some of the things that maybe the virtual world has, made you rethink the way that a conference can and should be run?
Yeah, so as much as we know how difficult the pandemic was, I think it has allowed for some very fast changes in our business. Understanding certain things, the knowledge of technology, how to incorporate both sides into what we do. And to me, one of the important things is like the research, like the mindfulness, like research like that hard time has brought to us, right? It's like it makes us think about differently what our needs are outside just playing, and what all the factors, the circles, what I like to like use are like the circles of life, right? We like the profession, the family, like health, we like all the things that work together. And like I think that's during that downtime, it will really allow us to kind of revisit everything, because I think as musicians, we're so busy traveling, we're so busy doing things that sometimes we forget the ties between everything. So it's been good. I think to me, it's like a lot of people, like the understanding of technology at that such high level, I did not have you like back then when we got hit. So there was a learning curve. What can we do? What can we offer? What kind of software exists to be able to do that, right? And how do we do that if we're trying to do a hybrid event in order to be able to do virtual and in person at the same time, which allows a whole new door for internationalization in order to be able to open the, for the people who can't afford or who can't come to the conference because they're too far away. So I think it is open these whole new things. I mean, ITG has been really trying so hard for like so many years to really open their doors with like international things. Hosting the conference itself abroad is a very difficult task for many like logistical reasons, for custom reasons, for financial reasons. And they've done it for a long time when it was under the older format with like, with a local host willing to take the planning on because they know the country and know different things. So we've been searching for a while now, trying to find a place and where to do it, and how to do it. But meanwhile, as we were like kind of stabilizing things in this country and trying to like bring the international to the US to allow to like things to open up, that kind of was the first step. I think we really had to really make it broader. The virtual allowed us to really hit the world with like the participation. Like we had almost every continent represented in that virtual conference. I think there was only a few countries that we could not find anybody. I think probably like one of Africa was one where we've had a very hard time finding people that we wanted. And we try hard, trying to look around and see who we could bring for artists to try to like rely on everything. We pretty much had every Latin American country represented, right? So we really, like, that was our main goal with the virtual. It's like, if we're going to do it, we're going to go all out, which we did, which was exhausting because we didn't have the manpower or the knowledge, the technical knowledge of how to do it. So we were learning as we're going, and we tried to do things, putting videos, adding branding. So like, I mean, it's really, the energy from the people that were involved was incredible. And I think if it wasn't for the people that work with me, I don't think we could have done it. I mean, at one point, I think I had like 7 laptops on my table running at the same time, like uploading videos and things like this, just in order to like be able to make it happen. And that was great. But I think what this is has brought to us for the future is really the need and the understanding that live conferences are important, yes, but it's not just that, because not everybody can be there. So we really have to reach out for the people who can't be there and bring what ITG has to offer to the places in the world that could not access it otherwise, right? We are the leading world trumpet organization there is, and our mission is to bring what we do to the places that can't have access to it. And we are learning how to do this. It takes time. It takes some financial power, some needs, but the board is working very hard towards those things. And now, so we're having the in-person conference. We have an app that allows us to have all the events that happen at the conference recorded and then on the app for a couple months after the conference, so people can access that beyond just there. So when you're at a conference, you can't see everything. There's too much going on, right? So people who come there, they have the access to everything, so they can actually eventually look at everything. But we also offer everything that we provided abroad. So like it's a work in progress. And I mean, we're always open to help people who have the knowledge, like the passion, the energy that they want to volunteer and help, come help us there. We like, we open them, welcome them with open arms, right? So we're there. So like we're trying, but I think like the main thing we're really trying to like expose is trying to be able to reconnect the trumpet world as one big family and realize it doesn't matter, because if it happens here in the US or somewhere else, or if a session is in English or in a different language, that we all need to learn from it and need to have openness to what's to be offered. And really, I mean, understand like so much repertoire that we don't even know, right? It's like that was what the virtual was, having so many performances from different parts of the world of music that I had never heard of, right? We had like someone from India who like really came in and did a great concert. And now, so we're trying to bring him now to like a live conference so people can be exposed in person. So we have all the things that we weren't thinking before, or we wanted to think about, but we didn't know how. And now we created those connections around, and it's been incredible. Now the technology moves so fast, and I feel a little bit like a dinosaur when I'm trying to look at it, right? I look at my kids, they all know everything about technology, and I don't know squat about it. And I'm trying there. So like the help of people coming in, younger, more experienced people within the technology world has been very key factor in helping us move forward.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's the truth with everything, you know, is that our society's driven by technology, and we have to learn to embrace it. But, you know, I try to stay on top of it as much as I can, but I'm way behind so many of the younger people. And because, I mean, I grew up at a time when there were three channels on the television. And, you know, there was AM and FM radio, and that was it. So now it's a completely different world, and we have to figure out how to embrace that and integrate that into what we do. And especially in things like conferences, you know, I was involved for many years in running and organizing conferences in the martial arts. And a lot of them fell off because they failed to evolve. It was just always, this is the way we've done it, and this is the way we always do it, whether it be marketing or subject matter or, you know, just programming, things like that. They just didn't evolve. And it seems like, you know, what I've been picking up from you over the past few years is that you are actively trying to help this organization to evolve and to you know, keep the parts that work, the things that are absolutely critical to the mission of ITG, but also how can we make this more accessible to more people. And I think that's where the technology comes in. I'll throw a plug out there for you guys. You know, if you are a young tech savvy person and you want to support ITG and help it to move forward, reach out to these guys, because that's what we want, you know, as a trumpet player. That's what I want. I want to have more access to information. I love it. I can't get enough of it.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, and we're the same way, and I agree. And it's like, I think one of the things I've been grateful for is the way the organization work with the board of directors, that with this constant like regeneration of things, like changing, like every 2-3 years, new like people coming in, people changing. It's like, so like there's constantly new ideas coming in, and like everybody comes in with great ideas, great concepts, support, and we're trying to push. And One of the big things that came this year from all this is like the revised competitions that we're having, right? Bringing more people with an extra live round. Before it was just the finals. Now we have semifinals. We added a new chamber music competition, new prizes that came out from the donors following like Ryan Anthony's passing. So like the Ryan Anthony Foundation took over like our competitions and started like donating money to be able to make more exciting, more rewarding for students participating. And this constant need to like progress. I mean, I think this is where like ITG is being great. It's like, it's been such a long like lived organization, right? This year is gonna be like year 47 for the conferences. And there's been a lot of changes. There's been a lot of new concepts, new ideas in the conferences. And I think I still have a few years left in me to bring new ideas, but like at some point, the things will be laid in such a way that whoever comes in and replace me once I leave will be the next 10, 15 years of like concepts of like ideas. And I'll be excited to go to that, because I see like, right, there's only so much we can share. Eventually we need some new ideas, new energy to come in and change things to like bring the future. And I always like to reference, when I look at that, for example, like Pacho Flores, right? We've all thought our whole life trumpets were going to be three valve instruments. Then he comes in with his new concept in order to be able to perform the repertoire that he likes. And he had instruments created in order to achieve what he wanted. So now we have a whole new path of abilities that we never thought we were going to have. And there's so much going on, so much being designed, built, things like around there, that we never can stay on top of things. So I think the more people get involved, the more ideas come in. So like right now we have a call for proposals for the conference next year, which is live on our conference. right? So we have another month where people can submit proposals. Like, this is the time. If people have new ideas they want to share, send a proposal in, right? The more proposals we get, the more difficult you make to us to select our presenters, the better it becomes, because we really have something exciting, something diverse that we can offer versus always like the same ideas, right? Like, we want this. We want those new ideas. We want people from anywhere in the world. It's like different backgrounds, different experiences. So we can really start shaping the conference in like the most exciting, international, diverse product event that we can have. So, and be able to help other organizations too, to want to like look at what we do and say like, holy cow, ITG is awesome. What can we do to make it ours like the same like there, right? So the same way we're learning from the other organizations. So I think it's so super exciting. That's where I get excited. And my energy start going when I start thinking about things like this. And when you start getting me like thinking about possibilities, then my mind just turn on, like it's like driving a Ferrari, right? I go there and it's like my mind just go like boom, 200 miles an hour. And it's like, there we go, what can I do? And if you look at, ask people in Trombamundi, they're going to say, well, there you go, JC has a new idea. What's coming up next, right?
All right, well, speaking of which, okay. So, a lot of times we limit ourselves in terms of our vision because, we start thinking too soon about what it might take to have something happen. We limit ourselves based on our experiences and the resources we have at this moment. But if you're dreaming and you're dreaming big, and there are unlimited resources, there are unlimited possibilities, what would be the one thing that you would love to see happen in the world of either IT or just the trumpet community in general? What would be that one thing that's like, man, if this could happen, I'd be set. I would be great.
Wow. Well, to me, I think like the being able to connect every part of the world into one area. So like, I think like the virtual weekend, but be able to reach out to everybody, like remove the language barrier, right? Because no matter, music is a universal language. Yes, of course it is. And when we perform things like this, but when we start sharing information, the ability to learn from everybody instantly and have everybody in one place and being able, kind of like the UN kind of conferencing, right? You have there that type of thing where everybody is there, all the ideas come into one place, without having the time space limitations that we encounter for a small organization. Because the reality is, an organization like ITG, any musical organization, we're a nonprofit, we are limited by our resources to be able to really reach out sort of things. So I think like remove the financial aspect, make everything affordable, and remove the international walls in order to bring everybody together and being able to just experience things no matter what it is with everybody. I think the passion I've seen in musicians around the world every time I've traveled, if we could have everybody in one place, and we're talking hundreds of thousands of trumpet players. Can you imagine having like opening fanfare with like 100,000 trumpet players? Man, I don't know what that would do. And like, I might not want to be like right in front of it, but I think that'd be awesome.
Tuning might be an issue, but and you mentioned Pacho Flores just a few minutes ago, and you just did a performance with Pacho and a few other people. What was that like?
It's a lifetime experience. Right. It's like, I've got over the years, I've got lucky to share the stage with some like really, really great musicians. Some of them were my former teachers, some of them they were friends. And every time it's been something new that I've taken away with people today, and I'm sharing the stage with Pacho, there's something in his sound, in his personality, that comes from inside. Everybody's trying to always become better, become more. Oh man, that's a hard one to like there, but they're just, when I listen to him, if I close my eyes, it's like he's reached what I always imagine a sound to be. with the passion that comes out of that bell, right? It's like the, what he's able to express in his musicianship is just out of this world. I mean, it's like I looked over the years for Maurice or anything like this. It's the evolvement. I mean, you have that, you have Hardenberger, like, I mean, you have all those incredible soloists, and now we have Pacho Flores, right? To me, that's where I place him. It's like I'm looking at him as hearing him play, like experiencing both in person, and it's the pinnacle of mind, love, passion, work ethic, everything in one place combined. He's achieved, like, to me, it's like he's achieved what I'm hoping someday I'll be able to get to. If I can, like, even get like half, 50% of what he's being able to achieve, right? I'll be in heaven, honestly. But it's like, when I look at him, when I see him work, because I've had experience to just be able to spend time with him outside, the performance into, and the level of professionalism that he brings into his lifestyle, everything that he does, from like health to mindset to preparation to understanding to knowledge to connections, that he puts all in one place, it's mind-blowing. Is really there. It's like then you understand really why he's the way he is and what he's able to achieve, what he does, because it's a lifestyle. It's not just like I learned how to play the trumpet well and I'm doing it. It's truly a full lifestyle about everything he does, everything he understands, how he's trying to share things. It's not about just I'm just going to play trumpet, right? And that's what's to me has been such an impressive experience. But playing with him is like playing on the stage. It's like you can do whatever you want. That thing, there's no limitations as far as what you can try to do when you're sharing musical moments with him. So.
Yeah. Well, like, you know, whether it's with him or you know, working with Tromba, you know, when you're in that situation where, the whole idea, like the rising tide raises all ships. You know, when you're on the stage with talented people, if you have the right mindset, then that should up your game. You know, sometimes we get in our heads where we try to compete with someone, which is going to, you know, throw you off your game, or you become intimidated, which is also going to throw you off your game. But if we look at the synergistic nature of playing in an ensemble and playing with very talented people, I know for me, I love being the least talented person in any organization I work with, because then that inspires me to always work harder. But being around someone that is so transcendent like him, I mean, I could only imagine what the energy that is exchanged on stage and through the music. So that's really great, and I think also it's important for us to remember that, well, yes, you have people like him and like you're saying, like Håkan and, you know, Sergey and, you know, in the older days Maurice and Bud and all those great names that we know. Those were inspiring. They've been inspiring to all of us as trumpet players. But just because you're not at that level doesn't mean that you can't be an inspiration to somebody else, because there's somebody that's you're already further along in the path than they are. And so, you know, we can be inspirations to them. So, you know, who are some of the other the people that have inspired you as a player, and how are you taking like those lessons and using it to be the inspiration for the next generation?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. I think like speaking back quickly on what you just said, it's like, yeah, I mean, competing, to me, competition is like, is the beginning of the downfall as a musician. We compete against ourselves, not against other people, right? We need to be inspired by people around us, which is, yeah, that's a key thing. And surrounding ourselves with better people makes us better people. The thing I think to me is like, I sit down in the administration and playing, it's like the people that work with me have helped me like get better because they are great, right? And they inspire me to want to do better and try to reach their level and like be like, so it's a team effort across. As far as inspiration personally, it's a multi like level to me. So the people who truly inspired me have been, in a lot of ways, I think my students really come in and constantly push me to be better and want to try better, understand things, do things. So I think that's they have a big place in who really defines me in my career. My kids, I think they're the one who like inspired me to want to reach some better places, better heights, like there. My personal experience there, but like from a musical standpoint, I think everybody I've shared the stage with in certain some ways, but like my teachers have been fundamental in throughout my path, right? From like Jean-François Michel to like Guy Touvron to Eric Aubier to Dave Hickman, you name it, I mean, Sam Pilafian, like when I was at ASU, right? So we've all had those musicians that have come across in our lives that either shook us a little bit, right? Put us in our place a little bit, brought some new ideas, inspired us. And really, I think the combination of all this have molded who I am. I think my like entrepreneurial mindset comes from Dave Hickman. I think from that standpoint, right? So like my Eric Aubier's like teaching to me has shaped me who I am today. Really, like he took me in a place where I was very in a dark place mindset because I had a lot of emotional setting problems I had, and I always look at back on him as like he kind of saved me, right? Like he took me under his wing when I think a lot of teachers would have said, no, we're not going to take that because there's no chance that we're going to be able to help him out. And he took me in, and from the first moment he says like, I know exactly what to do, and I trusted him. I went, I gave him 100% of what I believed in, and I never doubted him, and went all in, and he shifted me completely. And really, I think where I am today started with him. It's like people before that were great, and like they taught me the fundamentals, but he was the turning point to molding what my career was going to be. So I'm from here, then I had some lessons with like time, like with Wolfgang Bauer in Germany, then came to the US, and Hickman really pushed me there. And then after that, it was just, okay, the experiences I've done through the travels and the people I've played with. I mean, from sharing the stage with Vizzuti into like, I mean, like Pacho, you like name it, right? It's like you've had all those people you play with that really I've joined those experiences with an open heart every single time, and being able to welcome what they were doing and try to figure out how they were doing it and then apply that in my playing. So I think there's inspiration to me. It's on a daily basis. We always need to do better, and we've all had hard times. We all made mistakes in our lives, and I think understanding those, accepting those, welcoming those, and like learning from them makes us better players. And to me, I think that's where I am today. So I'm grateful. Pretty much anybody that's come across in my life has brought something to me, even during my hard times. So I think like I don't look back at it and have grudge into like to anybody or anything. Even when I think, well, I could have saved some years of like hassle in my play if I had not gone through this. I think it shaped me for the best. And now I'm just happy. I'm just like enjoying every day and like enjoying sharing music with my friends.
Now, that's a great life. You know, it is absolutely a great life. All right. Well, JC, we've got a few standard segments we need to get through before we can wrap up our time together. And the first one is our newest segment, and it's brought to us by Mr. Brian Davis of Airflow Music, and it's Go Practice.
I like it.
And so Go Practice is just about your practice concepts. And what I'd like to ask you about is about the efficiency of practice. And this is a big topic for so many of us. You know, obviously when you're a music major, you've got to be able to carve out that time to practice. That's a heavy practice time. But as we become a little older, when you're a professional and you have a touring schedule to work with, you have your other work engagements, and then someone like me who's not a full-time player, you know, and you're trying to juggle all those different balls in your life, sometimes you have to figure out how to make your practice efficient so that you can get the best bang for your buck with the time that you have. So when it comes to your approach to practice or the advice that you would give to a student for practice, how would you suggest structuring your practice so that it is the most efficient so that you get the best results?
I think that's everybody's different. Everybody is going to have a different way of like running things. But I think the most important part of all this, no matter who we are, is to be extremely organized, right? If you walk into a, if you're starting your day and you don't know what you want to achieve, then nothing is going to be focused, because you're going to try to throw everything you can in whatever given time you have there. So I like to think about my practice on the on a daily, on a weekly, and on a monthly basis. What do I need to achieve during that time in order to be able to learn everything I need to, or the skills I need to, or what I want to improve, or what kind of like bad habit did I form that I need to like work on to fix, right? So to me, some sort of like individual type notebook that works for us, right? So like we can create a notebook or like a practice routine kind of like guidelines for people to follow. But if it's not something that we create for ourselves, it's hard to follow it, because we might not believe in, or it might not work with our lifestyle. So it's, to me, I like to think like, if first day of the week is to lay out the whole week, what do I need to do? Okay, look at my schedule for the week, include from everything from like planning the conference to teaching to my kids, spending time with them, to the kids, external like events that I have, like sports, dancing, like this, right? So I try to map out my whole schedule for the week with everything I have. Then I look at, okay, what time do I have every day in order to be able to achieve what I need to, right? Which work, that's a very important factor for people who are like non-pro and comeback players, where you think about it, you look at, yeah, you have a full-time job. What do you do? I mean, but maybe by the time you end up the job, you're exhausted. You don't have the mindset in order to be able to like achieve the best. So for me, I like to think of a little bit the same way, but some days start at 7 a.m. Some days when I have to wake up, my kids start at 5:30 a.m., right? So then some days end up at 10, some days end up at midnight. So how do I achieve my days? But to me, it's to have a very specific plan ahead of time. I don't roll by the days like, I'm free now. Now I'm going to practice, because then I don't know what I'm supposed to achieve. I'm going to be planning that ahead of time. So by the time I walk in there, it's going to be there. Now, my fundamentals, my original practice is like sacred to me. So like my morning, I do that as early as I can in the morning, depending on when I need to wake up. So my first hour and a half to 2 hours, nobody's going to get in the way of that no matter what, right? Even if it's broken down, it's different things if I have to drive, but that's my time. So by the time I get to my teaching, I've achieved what was important to me for my playing. If I start my day and the first thing I do is like warming up with the student like there, then my day is like, it's not starting well, because I'm not going to be able to achieve everything I need to. And then I build throughout the day with whatever time I have, but it's always understanding what our needs are, right? Having a clear idea. It's like, are we working? How's our flexibility? How's our like range? How's like articulation? So we need to know when we're breaking things on a daily basis, what we can achieve. Now, if you think about it over a course of 7 days, it's a lot less overwhelming than if you think like, oh, today I have to do everything. Because sometimes we don't have the time. Right. Sometimes we try, no matter how goodwill we are, we don't always have the time to achieve everything every day. So we need to make sure over the course of 7 days, we've touched everything we need to do consistently and build habits. I think that's what I see a lot with like students in college right now. There's so much going on. There's so much they want to do that they practice whenever they can, but they don't create habits. Right. So one day they want to do something, then the next day they're going to do something totally different. Or they keep changing, they don't trust the process. And a thing that's important to me with practice, separation, complete separation from technology. If I'm practicing and my phone is there and I think about the text, emails I have to answer while I'm doing this, I am not focused, right? I need to separate myself and let the people who need to talk to me can wait 45 minutes to get an answer. That time in there, it's sacred. When I'm home and my kids are running around, they know if I'm practicing, they don't bother me. Right, they might be running around things like this, but they know it's like, yeah, we need to keep his like personal space need there, because he needs that time. And I think we can train people around us to like understand this. Very often I hear people like parents, it's like, well, I can practice because I have kids. I was like, well, I have four kids and I still practice. I think if you want it, if it's important to you, you will find a way to make it happen. It might require some sacrifices from what you want to do outside of playing, but if we truly believe and want to do it, we'll do it. But you're right. I mean, practicing is something for everybody. What I hear often nowadays is like, well, I'm bored. If I do that too much, I get bored. I was like, well, If you're bored, that means you're not engaged enough in order to figure out what are you trying to achieve with a specific exercise. If you do clock two every day for like a month and you get bored, you're not paying attention. But there's so much going on, right? From tone production, tone color, connection in between your notes, like air compression. I mean, there's so many factors that we can talk about, right? You can have whatever words you want to use, but to me, it all comes down to planning ahead what you need to achieve. And the busier your life is, the more planning you need to, because that's really where you become efficient. And you're right. I mean, without efficiency, we can't do anything. And the older we get, the less time we have, right? Students believe, oh, we're so busy, we don't have time. It's like, yeah, no, you do. You have time to play 4 or 5 hours a day. Once you have a job, multiple jobs, family and everything, where your time becomes a lot less. You might end up practicing like from 11 to 1 a.m. at night, right? Because that might be the only time you have. And sometimes it's not always fun. But you know what? If that's the time we got, that's when we do it. And I think that's allowing flexibility. I think that's a key word to me. Like, life flexibility comes into what we do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love what you said about sacred. You know, that your practice time needs to be sacred. And you know, and also I'm big believer in block time and doing things like that and having clarity on your objectives. So, you know, I think a lot of times we just think about the volume of practice. You know, we think that if I'm in the practice room for 4 hours a day or 6 hours a day, then that's how I'm going to be great. Well, what are you actually doing during those 4 or 6 hours? Is that, you know,
It's not the amount of time you spend practicing. It's how you practice during the time you have. And right. Sometimes you can achieve a lot more in an hour and a half that you can in 6 hours if you're not focused.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. Love it. Good stuff. All right, let's move on to our next segment. Next segment is brought to us by Michael Barkley, Barkley Microphones. This is called Sound Off. And this is about your approach to trumpet sound. So what's JC's favorite tip about developing a wonderful, beautiful, versatile trumpet sound?
Listen to a lot of players, not just trumpet. Listen to a lot of musicians all around and try to teach ourselves what sound is, what colors are you after. I think molding colors is key. It's like to me it's like a painting of Monet, right? You have all those colors going on in there and you have to be able to understand how to achieve them. And we all have our standard favorite trumpet players. Sometimes what I see with my students, like, they focus on one area of like music only. Some people will only listen to classical. Some people will only listen to jazz, but they're not willing to listen across. And I think trumpet sound, it's a life experience. It's all our experiences we've gone through life from like young age, everything we've listened to. And we start putting all that into one thing until we define who we want to be. If we don't know who we are, we can't have our own trumpet sound. We don't want to copy somebody else just because we have to, because then, I mean, we don't need like 17 Maurice André, right? We had one and he was the best, right? That's great. We're going to try to like achieve some of those same ideas, but we still need to find who we are in order to have our sound. And I don't define sound with instrument or an instrument brand. I think the sound starts in our heart, then in our mind, and what we hear as we express, and we can achieve that no matter what's in our hands. So I think that's what's key. And I think great instrument makers have allowed us the flexibility to be able to utilize those to achieve certain goals that we want. And we've all had our preferences, but it really comes down to the end is, what are we hearing inside our head? We can't produce something we can't hear. And I think that's one of the challenges we see a lot nowadays. People have their ear is not developed enough yet to be able to understand how to produce what they want to, even if they might be able to hear it. But I think that's the key factor, and that's a lifetime work. I mean, I think I'm getting better to like, I'm getting to the point where I'm happy. There's still so much more I want to achieve and define and find, discover, right? So I don't think I'll be happy completely until probably the day I put the trumpet down, when I'm ready to like go to the next life.
Yeah, I hear you on that. All right, awesome. Well, let's move on to this next segment, which you already started to touch on a little bit, but we're going to dive into it. This is Geared Up, and this is a discussion about gear. It's brought to us by Venture Mouthpieces, Venture, where technology, design, and craftsmanship intersect. Use the code TrumpetGurus21 to get 10% off your order. So as you said, you know, sound is innately from you, or should that, you know, that's where it comes from. And the instrument, the horn, the mouthpiece, things like that, should just be a way of amplifying that. But there are certainly things that we have to consider in terms of our gear. And as an educator, someone who's working with students who are really at that point where they're starting to develop into their own individuals, what kind of advice do you give in terms of finding the that is going to make your job easier?
Okay. Yeah. Well, this, I think, is kind of everybody's like process in order to find it. I think that with students, what people are learning through your career, the first important rule is you got to try. You got to try as many things as you can. You got to go experience yourself with like older brands, because when I was younger, I remember my teacher said like, well, this is what you have to play, right? This is the one brand, this is the one model you have to play. And that's what everybody's gonna play. To me, it's like one of the challenges you hear now, for example, like when you think about in the drum corps world, right? They make them all play one brand, one model, one mouthpiece size. I think that's forgetting about people's morphologies, like bodies, like things like this. It's one mind which doesn't reapply, because that's not how you achieve one sound. Now, if you beat it up out of people for long enough, yeah, you get there, but that's not working with people's natural abilities, right? It's like you look at a lead player, they will have different like type size mouthpiece to be able to play like lead, no matter what it is. Orchestra players, I mean, like look from Bud Hersett to like with different people playing different equipments. Like it's the people say like you play big size equipment, you're gonna be able to play louder. I've heard people who play pretty damn loud with like smaller equipment. So I think the concept is we need to forget about a specific guideline about what is for what. And we can utilize, like to me, the equipment is, like you said, is the extension of what we do, is the amplification of what we do. Now we're all gonna find instruments that work better for us. That's gonna help us feel comfortable. That's gonna help achieve what we need to. And I think that's what the key, but without experience first, we can't tell what that is. No matter what our teacher says, right? I can tell you right now, you're gonna play this brand, this model, you're gonna sound great. Okay, but is that the sound you want? But if you have never tried anything else, how are you gonna know what you want, right? And I think this is why I like conferences, like from small event, local events, or regional events, to big international conferences, you come in and you have all the brands there. And I tell my students, like, go try everything. You know what I play. You've tried it. You know what people around me play. You've tried them. Now go play something you've never tried. Because as an educator, if you end up in like middle school or the high school teaching, you're going to have to help those people find something, not only from the quality aspect, but from the price range aspect. You need to know that information. From mouthpieces, what works for you? Understand people's face, teeth, lips, right? Everything. How are you going to tell? You can't just tell everybody, oh, you're going to play 1.5 C. It's going to work great. That's not what it is. And nowadays, we have access to those things. And we have such a large quantity of incredible like makers all around the world that being close-minded about one thing only, to me, is a disservice for the world, because everybody's going to find what works for them. But unless you know, if you tried it, of being able to expose to it, it's a little difficult. But for me, I've been grateful that every brand I've played over the years have always given me something beautiful and incredible, right? Like, I mean, I've played pretty much on all the big brands, and I've loved every single one of them. Where I'm landing right now, where I find my home now today, is just because I felt it fitted me better in order to express what I wanted at this point in my life. I think that's what it is. But like, I wouldn't have found this in my playing if I hadn't gone through all the other like instruments before in order to lead me to this point in my life. So it's like, again, it's like grateful every company, every relationship I've built over the years. And sounds, I listen to some of my recordings from like some of the different brands I've had, like I love them, right? I love listening to that sound. Some of them were different, some different concepts, but like we all came down to like where we are today, which evolves.
I like that. Yeah, evolution.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. All right. Final segment, JC. This is brought to us by Robinson's Remedies, Rapid Relief for Your Sore Tire Chops. This is the Robinson's Remedy Rapid Fire Round, series of questions that kind of bounce all over the place. Just need your quickest response.
Sounds good.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Let's do it. All right, first one. Who's the biggest influence on your life that is not a trumpet player?
I would say my oldest son, Gabriel.
All right. What's your favorite book?
Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
All right. What's the worst movie you've ever seen?
Oh, what is it called? I can't remember the titles, but there's so many. I can't remember titles. I'm so bad. I froze here.
All right, not a problem.
Sorry. there's a lot of them, trust me, but like I just can't remember.
Yeah, pretty much. All right, next question. If you weren't a trumpet player, what would you want to be?
When I was younger, I wanted to be an architect.
All right. What is your favorite drink?
Natural fruit juices, like mango juice.
Mm. Tasty. Only a fresh juices.
Fresh juice, yep.
Yeah. All right. You can have a dinner party, and at this dinner party, you can invite any three living people, any three people in the world. Who would you want to have there?
That's good. One of them would be a life coach I've been following for a while now. His name is Brian Buffini. He's in California. He does a lot of life coaching, career coaching, like thing. His podcast has been like really shaping my lifestyle and what I believe. So I think that would be one of them. I think within trumpet players, I've got lucky enough to be able to share, to meet everyone I wanted so far. And that's not true. I think Thomas Stevens, Full Organ Trumpet World, that's someone I didn't get a chance to meet in person. I would have loved to be able to sit down and talk with him. And then I would say Messi, because I'm a big soccer fan.
Okay. All right. That'd be good, some good conversation there. All right. You've got three additional chairs at your table, and those are for any three people from history. So any three people that are no longer with us, who would you want to have?
Within the trumpet world or any?
Anybody.
Mandala. I would say Pelé for like soccer again, and then
so many choices.
So yeah, well yeah, that's so hard to be able to have three in like talk. Steve Jobs.
Okay. There you go. Good party. Lacquer plated or raw?
To me, plated.
Okay. What's your favorite quote?
There's no failures in life. There's only lessons.
Okay. What's your greatest fear?
Not having my kids in my life.
You could be granted one superpower. What would it be?
Travel the world like instantly, being able to be transported any place, any time.
That would be very handy. What aspect of trumpet playing do you find to be the most overrated?
Screaming high range.
All right. And what aspect do you think is the most underrated?
Soft and low playing.
All right. You could go back in time and give your younger self one piece of advice about music. What would it be?
Enjoy the ride.
All right. And while you're back there, you're going to give your younger self one piece of advice about life.
Believe in yourself and don't let external energies try to drive where you're going.
All right. Final question for you, JC. What do you want your legacy to be?
Kindness. I think when people remember, it's like the connection, family, happiness, kindness, and I can the people that are around me. That I think that's probably the most important part in my life.
Right. Well, awesome. Well, I certainly, for one, appreciate everything that you've been doing for the trumpet community, from both the standpoint of what you're doing at Westchester, and also the work that you've been doing with ITG. You've certainly been making a lot of impact, and you have directly impacted my life. So I do certainly thank you for that. So I appreciate your contribution.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. It's like always fun to be able to share things with like friends. So like I appreciate it. Looking forward to seeing you again soon.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I might have to make a trip out to Westchester soon just so I can go to Iron Hill. So we'll have a beverage together. You can get a fruit juice and I'll find something else.
Sounds like a plan.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us for this episode of the Trumpet Gurus Hang. And as always, like, subscribe, share with friends, other trumpet players. You can even share it with a violin player. I don't care. We want to keep this thing going. And if you have suggestions for other guests or topics, please let me know, because the show is for you. So until next time, folks, peace and slide grease. We out.
See you. Thank you.
Thanks for hanging with us today. This podcast is all about creating deeper connections through our mutual love of music and the trumpet life. Make sure you subscribe to this podcast and also like and share this episode with a friend. We want to see the hang grow for show. Please support our sponsors and consider becoming a personal supporter of this podcast as well. Remember, for less than the price of a bottle of valve oil a month, you can keep this podcast moving smoothly. The Trumpet Gurus Hang is recorded at the Candy Factory, a co-working space and social club located in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Jose Johnson is the executive producer. Post-production editing is by Mitch Bowers. Our opening theme song was composed and performed by Lexi Signor. And our closing theme music comes courtesy of The Greatest Funeral Ever. Incidental music is by Ethan Swayze and Jose Johnson. Graphic design by Ann Kirby of The Sweet Core. The Trumpet Gurus Hang podcast is produced in collaboration with the So Good Lancaster Media Group.